addiction isn't sobriety, it's community and connection. And that's so much of what we try to do here. I'm going to dismiss the kids. If you're 5 to 10 years old, you can head on to the back. It's good stuff. Who's teaching today? Oh, Aaron and Carrie. Thank you so much, Carrie. And Aaron. Right, there. Have you ever tried to control an outcome, and in like the controlling of it, you missed what was happening right in front of you? All right, those kids are, they're ready. We live in a world that is driven by like anxious control, that is just constantly trying to go like, if I control this, then it will be better. We plan every detail, we manage every risk, we brace ourselves against every potential problem, and we think that peace will come when I'm in the driver's seat. Like, if I can be the one that controls this, then peace will come. But I think oftentimes what we've found is that that doesn't happen so much. Today we're going to look at Luke chapter 19, verse 28 to 48. In the black Bibles in front of you, it's going to be page 1497. This is the triumphal entry. We've been going through Luke for the last, I don't know, year. And what we've come to now is we've come to this point of Jesus entering Jerusalem. There's good things happening. For 3 years, Jesus has been teaching and walking with his disciples. And today, he's walking into Jerusalem. He's predicted his death a number of times. And so Jesus is walking into this deeply anxious system, and he's been telling people, I'm here to die. But as Jesus steps onto the stage, he turns every expectation upside down. He turns every expectation upside down. The people thought that when the Messiah comes, what's going to happen is he's going to overthrow Rome, and we're going to read something totally different over the next few months. I'm going to read for us Luke chapter 19, verse 28 to 40. That's going to where we're going to start with, 28 to 40. But to start with, my first point is going to be that there is an unexpected king, an unexpected king. If you're filling out the bulletin, if you're filling that along, if you're in our app on Church Center filling it out, if you fill it out completely, I have a dum-dum for you afterwards. They're back in my office. Are you excited for a dum-dum? This is Luke chapter 19, verse 28 to 40. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. And if anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying this colt?' say, 'The Lord needs it.' Those who were sent ahead went and found it, just as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, the owners asked them, 'Why are you untying this colt?' And they replied, 'The Lord needs it.' And they brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven, glory in the highest.' Some of the Pharisees and the crowd said to Jesus, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples.' 'I tell you,' he replied, 'if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out.'" Okay, so there's something that we need to see here that if we miss it, if we don't understand it, we'll misinterpret these verses. There's a thing that would happen in ancient times that no longer happens today. What would happen is a king would go off to war. A king would leave his castle, march through town, ride his horse out, lead his army on battle. And then afterwards, after he's victorious, he would come back. And as he's coming back, he would send some of his troops ahead of him. And those troops would go through the town saying, "Our king has come home. Let's go out and meet him." And so the whole town would go out into the wilderness. They would meet Jesus there. They would meet the king there. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. They would meet the king there, and they would march with him back into town. And they would march him through the city. And they would be singing his praise the whole time, singing about how he had been victorious in battle. And they would march him all the way to the castle, and they would see him sit on his throne. And they would celebrate that their king had come home. And what we're seeing here is Luke is describing this to us, but he's describing it to us in a really upside-down way. If you want to think about this, like, you've probably seen like Robin Hood when King Richard comes home and they throw him a parade. That's what's happening. And so what we see here is Luke is doing the same thing. He's talking about Jesus in this way. If we look at Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9, this is how the Old Testament portrays Jesus coming. This is how the authors, Luke and the early church, they saw Jesus in this way. Zechariah 9:9 says, "Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly, riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." Luke isn't subtle about this. The people in the crowd, they shout, "Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven, glory in the highest." Nobody in the Gospel of Luke has called Jesus king yet. The first time it happens is right here. Luke is using this motif and he's trying to make it really obvious. He's like he's using a megaphone. He wants us to see it. But watch how it actually unfolds. The returning king's men would run ahead of him and announce to the city, "Your king is coming home." Jesus sends his disciples and they get this like donkey. He doesn't come on a war horse. He comes on a donkey that no one's ever ridden. The crowd is announcing his victory, but there's one problem. Jesus has told them already, "I'm not coming here victorious. I'm coming here to die." See, the order is all wrong. It's all unexpected. It's all upside down. You're supposed to win first and then come back. But Jesus comes to the city to die on the cross. The people are meant to celebrate, but the leaders of the city are telling the people, "Hey, be quiet." The Pharisees, the leaders of the city, are saying, "Stop announcing this about Jesus." I think one skill, if you want one skill that will change the way you read the Bible, never picture yourself as Jesus. When you're reading the Gospels, you're not Jesus. In any of the stories, I'm not Jesus, you're not Jesus. And oftentimes, I would like to think about myself as though, like, I am the celebrating crowd. But if you want to change how you read the Bible and you want it to impact you more deeply, I think more often than not, I am the Pharisee. And so are you. And so are you. Imagine this. Imagine you're picking up somebody from the train station that you've never met. And you were told, "Look for the important-looking man." And you think, suit, briefcase, fancy watch, he'll stand out to me. And you scan the platform for the suits, the fancy watches, all of that. And you think, "Oh man, I hope this guy is coming." Three or four people pass you by that look like that. And the whole time, the person you're actually meant to see, the person you're meant to pick up, is like just standing off to a corner wearing plumber's clothes. Because you've already decided what he's going to look like, you missed him. That's the Pharisees on the road. They decided a king rides a war horse. A king doesn't come on a borrowed colt. And the ones who made up their minds, they looked right past Jesus. And so I think we need to be able to receive and recognize the king who actually came. Not the one who rules by dying. Not the king that you would have voted for. We need to be looking for the king that actually came. So get specific about what you've said, "Hey, this is how Jesus is going to look in my life." Because perhaps you're overlooking what Jesus actually wants to do. You don't have to manufacture or make up a better king. The real one already came. He came the whole way and he rode the cross. He went to the cross to have you. See, I have this fill in the blank on this next one here. I don't get to pick my king. The king I ordered would win, but the king who came chose to die. The king I would order would win, but the king who actually came chose to die. Let's read on. This is Luke chapter 19, verse 41 to 44. It's up here on the screen. 41 to 44 says, "As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, He wept over it and said, if you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it's hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. So Jesus is really flipping the script on this. Jesus in the triumphal entry is meant to have this crowd usher him into the city, and the city is supposed to celebrate their king, but Jesus mourns over the city. He says they don't recognize what's happening. And so what we have is, in my second point here, is the unexpected tear. The unexpected tear. He's meant to walk into a city that adores him and finds one that doesn't recognize him at all. They don't recognize the moment. And he mourns, saying, you could have had peace, but instead, since you've missed it, there's going to be pain. And he weeps because they don't know him. What's happening has been hidden from them. And he weeps because a day is coming when the enemies will crush them. And all of it, he says, happens because they didn't recognize the time of his coming. The city should have known the moment its king arrives. And instead, Jerusalem is blind to it. Imagine a man whose father is getting older and slower, and he keeps meaning to sit down and have those conversations, those real talks with him, keeps thinking there's always going to be another visit, always going to be a next time, that he's busy, he's distracted, he's managing his own life, and you know where this is going. One day that window closes for good, and he'd give anything, to have that opportunity back, because he never recognized that the time was now. That grief is where Jesus is standing when he looks at the city. He doesn't scold it, he weeps, because they didn't recognize the time of God's coming to them, and the window is closing. I hope that you would recognize this time now. Stop assuming that the window is going to stay open forever and look for where God is coming and to meet you right now in this moment. Don't look for a time when you'll be less busy. The reconciliation that God wants you to have is here and now available today. Don't postpone it off. He doesn't stand over your blindness with a clipboard judging you. He weeps over you. That the same king, I got this as a slide, this next fill in the blank, the same king that weeps over Jerusalem weeps over me. He weeps over you. And he's still here. And he wants you. The window's still open. That's not a threat. That's mercy that God shows us. Where do you need to meet God today? Let's read on. Because Jesus is now kind of entered into the gates of the city. He's entered into the city. He's seen some of these people celebrate over him, but the leaders miss it. Now he's mourned over the city. And inside of like the motif of the king coming home, what would happen is the people would march him to the castle where he would sit on his throne. Let's see where Jesus heads. This is verses 45 to 48. When Jesus entered the temple courts, he began to drive out those who were selling. It is written, he said to them, my house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers. Every day he was teaching at the temple, but the chief priests, the leaders of the law, and the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. And yet they could not find any way to do it because all the people hung on his words. So here's the third flip. Jesus is meant to walk into his castle and sit on his throne and be celebrated. Jesus is the incarnate God. He doesn't have a castle. He has a temple. So he goes to the temple. And now what was supposed to happen is that when the king's men were sent back, they would go and they would clean up the castle. They would let the castle servants know, hey, the king's coming. Let's get this in tip-top shape. Let's make it ready for him. But this king, though, comes and finds a bunch of traitors. Literally in both words, traitors, those who have betrayed him, and traitors, those who are selling. He finds them there and he throws them out. The house wasn't ready. It had been desecrated. See, the people thought Jesus would come and overthrow Rome. The Romans had conquered them. He thought, oh, when the king returns, Rome's going to be overthrown. But Jesus just starts throwing out the temple money changers. So my third point here is the unexpected house. The unexpected house. The house wasn't ready. The city wasn't ready. The people weren't ready. And then watch where he settles. You would expect a king to rule from his throne. That's what happens. They march the castle, the king sits on the throne, and he rules from there. But what we see is Jesus in the last week of his life is just teaching in the temple every day. He spends every day teaching in the temple, teaching people to be like him. The men entrusted with the house, the chief priests, the scribes, the leaders, they start looking for a way to kill him. And they can't at first because the people hung on his every word. Imagine coming home from a long trip and you're finding that someone's been living in your house. They've moved the furniture, they're running a little business out of your living room, they're selling things off your kitchen table. And when you walk in, they look at you like, what are you doing here? It's my house. What do you mean, what am I doing here? And they made it a marketplace and treated the owner like a trespasser. But recognize whose house you are in now. Let the king be clear on whose this is. See, Jesus didn't clear my house to condemn it. He clears it to live in it. I got that as a fill in the blank. He didn't clear my house to condemn it. He clears it to live in it. See, the cleansing isn't rejection. It's the owner moving in. Here's the honest word, church. We have been really good at a church at gathering people. We've been really good at gathering people, putting on events, bringing people into those events. What we've really struggled with is actual discipleship. Jesus spends his last week teaching the people to be like him. Imagine his last week on earth and he says, I'm not going to spend it with my family. I'm not going to spend it with my disciples. I'm going to spend it in the temple every day teaching people to be like me. Because that's what the word disciple means. The word disciple in Greek is mathetes, and it means to learn. And so when we're disciples of Jesus, we learn to be like Jesus. And I think we've really struggled with that we've put more energy into gathering together than into learning to be like Jesus. And so I want to say, like, I recognize that as an issue, and we're going to try to change it. If you can go to the next slide here. I have been working on my doctorate for the last couple of years studying how do we disciple men and women in early recovery and inside of our church to be the men and women that God has created you to be. And so what I want to do is introduce you to this. This is RISE. This is a curriculum that I've written. And if you think about a kite, I want you to think about a kite. A kite is made up of two elements. At its center is a cross. It's a wooden cross. And then wrapped around the cross is a piece of plastic. So what we want to do in terms of like level one of the curriculum of RISE is that we want to see your life become formed on the wooden cross. That at the center of who you are, we want the cross, Jesus Christ himself. And then we want to wrap you with the spiritual rhythms that you need to get through your day. That what we found is that there are so many things that kind of block us from being the people that we are meant to be. That we are often anxiety-riddled people. We're often anxious. We have things like shame and guilt that we carry with us. And so what this first level does is it teaches us, how do I lead myself? This is a leadership curriculum. My doctorate is in leadership. And before you can stand up here and lead anybody else, the first thing that you have to learn is, how do I lead me? How do I lead me? How do I take my life and build it into the wooden cross wrapped with the spiritual rhythms that are necessary? And so if that's you, if you are a person who's anxious, if you're a person who's got shame, who's got guilt, who doesn't maybe know, hey, I think I should be doing more, but I don't know where to start. This curriculum's for you, and I've written it for you. And so I want to invite you that you can sign up today, that beginning in the early October, October 7th and October 11th, we're going to start a 10-week class. Pick one of them. Wednesday nights, or Sundays right after church, and we're going to do 10 weeks of this, of teaching you what is it like to be formed in the shape of the cross. And so that's available right now in your bulletin. There's a QR code on the back. If you are in our app, you can press, and you're in the bulletin, you can click the button that says Rise on there, subscribe to Rise, or sign up for Rise, excuse me. And we're going to start that. And so would you take that first 10 weeks with us? I think it would be great. So let's look at what we've seen this morning. At the gates, an unexpected king. He came not on a war horse to win, but on a borrowed colt to lose his life. And the crowd that had ordered a different king, they looked right past him. In a city, there's an unexpected tear. He wept, he stood, and he didn't scold over people who couldn't recognize the time of God. And then there's this unexpected house. He walked into what was already his, and he cleansed it. He cleared out what didn't belong. And the men entrusted with the house, they didn't recognize him, and they just started planning his death. And now you see where all three of these roads are going. The king came to the gates, he wept over the city, and he cleansed the house, and he kept right on walking out of that temple and towards the cross. He didn't come to win in the way that we win. He came to be recognized and rejected. And he let himself be rejected, handed over by the very people whose house he just cleansed, so that you could be received. We started this morning asking whether you've ever gripped an outcome so tightly that it went astray. I think that's the oldest danger there is, because the king is right in front of you, and he wants to grip you, and he wants to take control of your life. And if you want to be formed into his image, here's how to do it. I'm going to invite Sarah and Garen to come up and lead us in a song. And as we do, would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, we want to take a moment and ask that you would continue to meet us here. Would you continue to show us the ways in which we proclaim you like the people on the streets, but we don't recognize you as Lord over our lives? Lord, would you show us the own parts of our house where we have rooms that are not open to you that need to be cleansed by you? Would you show that in my own heart, Lord? And would we take this time, just turn it over to you, asking that you will begin that work in us? And we want to pray this in your name, Lord. Amen. Would you stand with us?